Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is 11 minutes after 12 o'clock on this Cyber Monday. Everyone survived Thanksgiving and Black Friday and whatever they call Saturday, and then there was Sunday, and now it is Monday. The Inno Boys are here, Jim Dahlke and Will Flanagan, as they are most Monday afternoons on the Business Lunch. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
So, any shopping yet today?
I'm shopping right now, right on my phone.
Well,
got to get those deals.
That's what they say, right? Their productivity is going to be way down today because people are shopping. I bought all my Good Friday. Not my Good Friday.
Big shopping day that Good Friday.
I'm so far ahead. All my Cyber Monday stuff last night.
Yeah.
You know, while I was
watching that new the Super Nintendo that came out. My sister bought that. It's like the small little one.
Yeah.
It fits in the palm of your hand. It's got like 30 old Super Nintendo games on there. We played that for hours over Thanksgiving. It was so much fun.
Okay, so producer Michael Heidemann gave me some statistics on shopping and all that, which leads me to one of the stories you guys have written about Geofedia. And tell me if I'm wrong or what's going on here. Here's a statistic. Top products being talked about on Facebook and Twitter. It's going to be a rough day. Are Sony PS4, Fitbit, Pokemon Sun, Xbox, Barbie, blah, 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 Amazon Echo. Okay, so they've mined the data from Facebook and Twitter and all these places, and they know what we're talking about, right? Isn't that what Geofedia did
kind of
losing its business over?
Yeah, so basically what Geofedia does is they are geolocation targeting. So they're really focusing on where you are at a given time as expressed on social media. So a lot of times you can tag where you are when you post. So you can say, oh man, having a great time at WGN, I can tag my location. So not only am I saying what I'm doing, I'm showing you, my followers, and also media companies who track this stuff where I am. Brands can use that to then market to me. Oh, you're at WGN? Well, guess what? Right down the street, there's a cool deal at Nike. So Geofedia has some really innovative data tracking software that allows brands and businesses to take advantage of this. One of their customers was also police departments, and they were using...
Well, many of their customers. One area of sales.
Yes, and a vertical of people that use them were police departments, and they were using Geofedia to help track protesters and large gatherings. Now, the American Civil Liberties Union obtained public records showing this, and people weren't happy. You know, it showed a real invasion of privacy. I think everyone understands if you're going to use Twitter or Facebook for free, you're going to get marketed to. But the second when you realize that your activity on social media is being used by the police to monitor your behavior and activity, it really kind of worried some people. And Facebook and Twitter and Instagram paid attention, and they cut their access off.
And then Geofedia had to lay off half their workers,
because that's when you are a data management platform and you're not generating your own data. When the person who's giving you that data says no more, you're in trouble.
Okay, and so now my compare and contrast essay question for the day is, why is it that we're not incredibly bothered that The Gap is using this information about what we do on Facebook, but we are enraged when the police department is?
Well, I think what's happening is that the police departments are allegedly using this to sort of target minority groups, and that's where the ACLU is really coming in. I mean, Geofedia, on its point, said it's had a statement that it wasn't created to impact civil liberties. It's just selling the technology that it has to law enforcement organizations, but they are in turn sort of using this.
They were using them at big street protests,
right?
Which were manned predominantly by minorities.
Yes,
but they weren't saying, you know, what are the minorities doing today? They were activities, and they were trying to figure out who was there, what people were saying, like where the crowd might move, and things like that.
Correct. And so Geofedia has done some interesting things. I mean, not just selling to law enforcement, they also sell to a lot of media companies. So CNN, for example, uses it to report stories. They can find out where, like, a lot of social media chatter happens. They can say, oh, there's something going on in this city because a lot of people are talking about a shooting or a fire, or it's a way to sort of pinpoint news.
Yeah, and to me, it shows a lot of the vulnerability of a lot of venture-backed companies that rely on third parties. When you think about all of these businesses in the world that are basically operating off of Google, Facebook, Twitter, and what happens when
Mama cuts off lunch?
What happens when Dad says no mo?
Right.
You're in a lot of trouble. So that's they've raised over $20 million. They're one of Chicago's fastest growing companies. It's you know, a great founding team. So they've made a statement that they're going to be developing their own innovations so that they can keep the tools. But in response to this cut, they had to cut their staff from 60 to 30.
One of the moving right along then, one of my favorite memories of living in the city was being able to walk to the corner, buy a Christmas tree, put it on my strapping shoulder, and then walk down the street, you know, just like they did in the
like a real dinosaur.
Like they did in the old paintings and all of that stuff. Now there's a company. This can't be new, right? Christmas trees have been delivered forever.
Oh, yeah, but we're sort of taking the app forward version of this, right? The okay. Uber for everything. So use your phone, click a button, get a Christmas tree. That is sort of the operation that Dolly is running. It is a startup that connects people who are moving to truck owners. So you've got to get your furniture moved from your one apartment to your new apartment. You can press a button on the Dolly app and get connected with a truck owner. So they're doing a little special promotion right now over the holidays where they will connect you with a truck driver and a Christmas tree.
Yeah, and if I can just make a plea to the listeners. Use this instead of using Uber or Lyft to get your Christmas tree. I've seen that. Now, I have abused the Uber and Lyft services when I've had like a lot of boxes to move and I'll get a big Uber and they think they're just bringing me from one place to another and next thing they know they're helping me move. Yeah, totally unfair. But I saw a Lyft with the L sticker on there. Some guy dialed a Lyft to get his Christmas tree. And the tree, you know, the tree does damage to your car. So
that's going
to
give you a bad review afterwards.
That's going to get you a terrible review. So use a service that is set up for it. Don't make your Uber driver load your Christmas tree in his trunk.
That's Will Flanagan, who now admits he uses Uber to move.
Yes.
And
when
you do that, you say, hi, my name is Jim Dahlke.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah,
don't ruin my rating.
Dahlke and Flanagan are here from Chicago Inn. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, talk a little bit about gift giving from the Chicago tech world when it comes to this holiday season. 12:22, it is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Okay, I will get tweets and texts after this next segment of people asking for names of what we're about to talk about. So grab a pen, grab a paper, or smartphones. Most of them have keyboards on them now, right, guys? So you can just write this down. All right, you guys have come up with a list of tech gifts from the Chicago tech community, right?
That's right. You can also check out the list on our website at chicagoinnow.com.
But yeah, such a better idea.
But pull over, stop your car, grab out a pen.
So we've got some stuff that we really caught our eye this year from Chicago startups, Chicago tech companies, businesses here that are doing some pretty innovative stuff with gifts around the holiday season. Got a couple of interesting things that I think people would like. One is a Kickstarter that just wrapped up and they're selling online is the Levitating Cup.
Yeah, we had those guys. I think I was off, but whoever was filling in for me had the Levitating Cup guys in.
It's pretty cool. So yeah. This is from the same entrepreneur that did Oak Bottle, which is the barrel-aged wine at home.
You can speed-age your
booze. Exactly. So pretty cool stuff. They're doing some really interesting booze innovation. And the Levitating Cup is just that. It comes with a base and a cup that levitates using electromagnetic suspension. This will cost you $200 for the base and the cup. But if you're going to try to impress at your holiday cocktail party, this is pretty cool.
You can't put a price on giggles.
We saw this at our Food Inno meetup a couple months ago. And, you know, sometimes it's easy to just roll your eyes at gimmicky sounding products. We have the Moto Bag on here, which is a motorized bag. But like the Moto Bag, the Levitating Cup is awesome.
Well,
it was 10 times cooler than I thought it was going to be when I saw it in person. And I immediately became like 20 years younger, just like staring at it and giggling.
What I like about this guy's idea is he can sell it to bars, mm-hmm. right? So you can have a levitating bar. So we'll do that. That's the Levitating Cup. You mentioned Moto Bag. We can ride around on your suitcase on the 606 for $1,000. What about American Press? Is that something that interests
you? American Press is really cool. So it's American Press. It's made at M-Hub, which is the new kind of manufacturing innovation hub. Think 1871, which is the big co-working innovation center in the merch mart for a lot of digital startups. This is like that, but for hardware and manufacturing. So this is one of the products that's being made there. It's, think a French press, like a portable coffee maker, but it's almost half espresso maker, half French French press in that you pour your grounds into a perforated pod and push that through. So if you're familiar with the French press, the worst part about it is it's
a mess.
It's a mess. It's a pain to clean up. This has completely gotten rid of that. And we were talking to the founder about this, and I had to like stop him, be like, no way this is the only one. Like, there's got to be a bunch of these. It's like, no one has had this idea yet. And I love that about some of the tech and innovation you find in Chicago. And that's kind of a lesson. Jim and I were talking about it for all entrepreneurs is you may, if you have an idea, there's really a chance that you're the only one who has this. You can now execute it, because I couldn't believe that this It's American Press was the only one out there.
It's American Press. Check that out. Okay, so that's $79.95. While we're at the Trading Post for $75, bucket feet.
Bucket feet is a great Christmas gift. I think I've given like probably 4 holiday pairs to my brother in the past Christmases. It's a great go-to gift.
Are they slippers?
Well, some are slip-on, but they're lace-up. So basically, if the sneakerhead on your list wants some really unique, fun shoes, bucket feet has like some pretty funny, interesting styles, both for men and women. So if you've got a shoe fan on your list, bucket feet's a great option.
Yeah, what I really like about this list is we have 15 items on here. We could have had 20, 30 more.
Right.
And Steve, you know, when we talk a lot about Chicago tech, you know, it has a reputation of being a very B2B tech city. That's where the city really excels, is building pragmatic software for businesses. But if you look at this list, a lot of these are, you know, consumer items. These are really cool tech and startup gadgets. So it's a nice reminder to see that, yeah, fun stuff is being built here as well.
We talked about the smart football earlier this year in the show from Wilson, and you guys ridiculed it. I don't know why. I think it's a great idea.
I'm pretty sure that was you, Steve.
I took it back. I apologize. I'm not going to discuss number 11. If you want to look that up, you can at Chicago Inno, because we've addressed that as well. Pearl Bath Bombs.
This sounds really cool to me. Yes, this is a great company. So Pearl Bath Bombs does a really interesting thing. It's a bath bomb. You drop it in your bath, but inside the bath bomb is a small container with a ring inside. Every bath bomb, it gives you a ring when it dissolves. They're worth around $10, but a few of them sprinkled have like $1,000 rings in there. So pretty interesting stuff. They've got a holiday collection too. So really cool things. So good stocking stuffer.
Yeah, and if you were to ask us why do we cover the bath bombs? One, it's a cool Chicago startup, but man, they have figured out Facebook. Every time they upload a video of their bath bomb sped up dissolving, they get like 1 million views. So it's a really cool kind of social media story.
It's like the new OK Go video.
Yes, that's... Is there a new one? Or are they just rocking the treadmill again?
No, there's a new one. I haven't seen it yet, but apparently they filmed it live in 4.5 seconds, and it's all these exploding paintballs and things that they slow down and make into a 2.5-minute video.
4.5 seconds? Wow.
Yeah. So tell me that name again with the...
The Pearl Bath Bombs?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, check them out. They have mastered Facebook marketing. That's how they really got known, is that their first video had 14 million views, and it just totally blew up.
Nice. All right. That's Jim Dahlke, Will Flanagan, both from Chicago Inno. Thanks for coming, guys. And we'll talk again next week.
Thank you, Steve.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Later in the program, Troy Hennikoff is the managing director of Techstars, and he'll be by. We'll talk to Troy a little bit. Right now, we'll take a break. The news just around the corner. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch. I want to mention, and I'll give you more information maybe later in the show if I have time, but Kathy and Judy announced last Saturday on their show that they're going to be the latest one to lead a WGN trip. They're going to go to Provence in May, next May. So you can listen to Kathy and Judy on Saturdays for more details there, or there's details at WGNradio.com, at SteveBertrandTravel.com as well. I'll try to give you a little more information later, but if you're interested, if you want a way to work out the turkey, why don't you walk around southern France with Kathy and Judy next May? Get the information on that. All right, so let's talk about social media. It's Monday. Randy Schaefer is here. She writes about social media for the Chicago Tribune. You don't look any worse for wear for the holiday shopping. You being okay so far?
Yeah, holiday shopping was actually pretty tame. I was expecting to come into a deluge of Facebook Live videos of Black Friday madness, and it doesn't look like any of that happened too badly. So.
Well, I think everything's just spread out now, isn't it? I mean, it's not this... people aren't really fighting to get into the stores like they used to?
They used to, what was it, 5 a.m. on Friday, people would be lining up and ready, but with sales starting on Thursday and things moving online and Cyber Monday happening all weekend, it seems to have calmed down lately. At least that's how it appears to me.
One of the things we've talked about when it comes to social media, of course, Facebook comes up a lot, and this Facebook check-in, and when they start that, today, sadly, was an event that prompted Facebook to initiate their check-in. Can you explain that for me?
Yeah, well, the shootings at Ohio State University, it's a good reminder to stay up to date with Facebook's safety check. And what that system is whenever there's an incident, Facebook will prompt people in the area to mark themselves safe. And also, if you have a loved one in the area, you can ask them via Facebook to mark themselves safe, which is a great way if you're in an area that's affected by anything. Facebook has turned this on in the past for shootings, for natural disasters, such as hurricanes, earthquakes. It's a really great way to check on your loved ones without bombarding them with text. They're getting a lot of text. They're panicking. They're in an emergency crisis situation. So you can just go to their Facebook and check and see if they've marked themselves safe.
And that was one of those things where I know a lot of parents were concerned today when they heard that going on in Columbus. And so that's what it's all about. It kicked in, seemed to have worked well.
Seemed to have worked well. I have a few friends over at Ohio State that have all thankfully marked themselves safe. So it seems to be working as planned.
Well, I'm glad to hear that for you. Okay, so we've also talked on the program about fake news. You brought it up a couple of weeks ago, and how, you know, these guys in Macedonia, was that you, Randy, we talked about?
More than likely.
Talking about, they would create these fake news stories. Well, I don't know that Donald Trump has fallen for a fake news story, but he has retweeted or taken sort of a fabricated statistic and turned it into national news this week.
Yeah, that seems to be one of the hot topics lately is Donald Trump turning 140 characters or less into national news topics. And today's...
Fidel Castro is dead.
Absolutely.
That was his one on Friday, I think.
That one was a little bit more of a real news topic. But the one in question today is actually... Trump has tweeted about how he won the popular vote if you deduct the millions of people who voted illegally, which is in fact a bogus claim with no documented proof that did originate, as you said, via a fake news site. And what exactly happened was, according to the Washington Post, a man named Greg Phillips, a self-described conservative voter fraud specialist, started tweeting claims from his handle Jump Vote before data on voter history was available in most jurisdictions. He tweeted that more than 3 million non-citizens had voted.
So this was, by the time Greg Phillips is tweeting this and sharing it, it's really unknowable.
Yeah, it's unknowable. And that was the thing, is Greg Phillips was asked by reporters for the data he used, and he refused to provide it. And he refused to say where it came from or what methodology he used. And so some of those fake news sites, or not necessarily fake sites, but ones known for stretching the truth, like InfoWars, picked it up, and Donald Trump's Twitter picked up that and tweeted it. And so no substantial proof that this is actually real, but it's out there and it's been tweeted as though it is real.
So InfoWars, that's the site that claims no one was killed at Sandy Hook, right?
Yes, that is most notable for its Sandy Hook conspiracy theories, among other conspiracy theories. It's a pretty conspiracy theory heavy site.
And so you've got the president-elect then retweeting, or not even retweeting, he sort of digested it and then, you know, and then rephrased it for his Twitter followers.
Absolutely.
I don't know what that tells us or if that's a sign of anything to come, but it's an interesting sort of thing.
And a good reminder that you should never take social media for face value and always, always, always check anything you read online.
Maybe from no matter where it's coming from?
Absolutely. I believe Abraham Lincoln said that you should always check what you find online.
Yeah, I know. Abraham Lincoln with his Twitter handle, I never could quite find it. Reddit is another social media site that seems to, well, I suppose they breed controversy. They sort of thrive on it in some ways.
In some ways, yes.
This was not in one of those good ways.
No, this wasn't. Reddit CEO has admitted to tampering with some pro-Trump posts on the site for, air quotes, fun. Steve Huffman, the site's CEO, said he swapped usernames in a forum, it's known over on Reddit as a subreddit, called the_Donald, which is a forum of Donald Trump supporters. And he kind of meant it as a joke. The switch made it appear that forum users were criticizing forum moderators instead of Huffman himself.
So people on this site are ripping Huffman, right?
Yeah.
It's a pro-Donald Trump site. They're ripping the founder of Reddit in many ways.
Yep, and Huffman decided he didn't want to be ripped, so he kind of switched some usernames around and let all of that profanity head to the forum moderators. And it was an ill-received attempt at a joke, and a lot of users of Reddit who don't even necessarily like or support Trump have said that they've lost a lot of trust in the site for this prank.
Okay, so my question then is, well, who has a lot of trust in Reddit? first of all? Is that a site where people have a lot of trust in?
Not really, and that's one of the things that makes Reddit so, I guess for lack of better terms, great, is the fact that it's kind of an anything goes, and Reddit itself is pretty slow to censor things, which a lot of people really like about the site, but also it can lead to a few problems as well.
And this was related to the whole Pizzagate thing as well.
Yeah, and that was a subreddit, correct me if I'm wrong, that began a conspiracy theory that members of top Democrats were involved in a child sex trafficking ring.
And this involved a pizza place in, I think, in Georgetown near where Hillary Clinton lived. And this pizza place was being threatened and all of this, again, completely made up, unsubstantiated, people's lives sort of ruined by this, people believing it, what they read online, right?
Yep.
So Huffman's trying to clean this up.
Yep.
Well, I shouldn't say that because he doesn't really try to clean it up. He's sort of thwarting his own site by fabricating lies.
Yep, but he has at least apologized, which is a good thing. Time to rebuild trust over at Reddit, I suppose.
All right, let's brighten things up a little bit. Generation Z, those are the people born after the year 2000.
Yes.
So they are ripe pickings for retailers this holiday season.
Yep.
I don't know, how lucrative can they be? I mean, what's an 8-year-old spending on Christmas?
Well, you have 8-year-olds, but you also have 16-year-olds that have maybe their part-time jobs or their babysitting gigs, and, you know, mom and dad still paying their rent, still living with the parents. So they've actually got quite a bit of money to spend on themselves and hopefully on Christmas gifts for others.
And retailers are trying to figure out how they're going to not only spend their money, but how the retailers might be able to persuade them to spend their money.
Yep. Forget malls and forget mail or catalogs. Generation Z is shopping a bit differently, and two of those ways they're shopping are through Instagram tags and Pinterest shopping option. Shopping Instagram tags is fairly new. It debuted about 2 weeks ago. So if you're on Instagram, you can actually give it a try. 20 U.S.-based brands, Kate Spade, Levi's, Target, Macy's, Warby Parker, just a few, have been asked to participate. All you have to do is open an Instagram image, tap it, and click the image you want to buy. That's it. You can shop in-app.
One of the things they said, too, is that this generation will be all about experiential buying, and they call it retailment. Retailment. Like a cross between retail and entertainment. I don't know, but does that go to something that looks appealing to you?
Kind of. I'm not exactly Generation Z. I'm a self-proclaimed millennial.
No, right, I know.
But I can kind of see that, yeah. We do like our experiences, even my generation. And if you can get an experience out of it, I say go for it.
Climb this wall and I'll sell you a T-shirt. Randy Schaefer writes about social media for the Chicago Tribune. Thanks very much for coming by today.
Yep, thank you for inviting me.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks, Steve Alexander. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on a Monday afternoon, Cyber Monday. If you're shopping while you listen, I don't mind as long as you listen. Let's talk a little bit about Techstars Chicago. Troy Hanikoff is the managing director, and he joins us on a phone line now. Troy, thanks very much for talking. It's a pleasure to say hello. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, well, thank you for having me.
All right. So, you know, I want to start with, we hear these terms, incubator, accelerator. Techstars Chicago is considered an accelerator. What's the difference between the two?
Sure. So incubators are typically places that companies can go to work and work on making progress in their business, but they're under no schedule, no particular curriculum. It's just a place that they can go and work easily. You've heard of co-working spaces, places like 1871, TechNexus, et cetera. An accelerator is where we take a cohort of companies, in our case, we take 10 each year, and run them through a curriculum together for 90 days, very intensive. Think of a boot camp for businesses that ends with a demo day. So for us, at the end of the program, we rent out the House of Blues. Each of the 10 companies that's in our program gets up on the main stage and pitches to a standing room only audience of investors.
You know, I don't want to put it in too crude terms, but it's almost like a reality TV show. It's like Dancing with the Stars.
Well, no, because there's nobody else watching, and they're doing it to improve their business.
And everybody wins.
For entertainment.
I understand. I get my point is that it's a set schedule. It's a course. It's almost coursework in a way.
Right, and we have very set curriculum. So the first month is all about mentors. This last year we had 163 mentors who came in, did 602 one-on-one meetings with our companies. Incredible mentors, founders of companies like Groupon, Grubhub, OpenTable, Priceline, CDW, OkCupid. Awesome, awesome mentors. The second month is all about growth. So they do, we bring in a bunch of experts to help them learn things that they need to help grow their business every single day. And then the third month is about execution and getting ready for that demo day. It's a once in a lifetime, literally, opportunity to pitch 500 investors at once, something I've never had the opportunity to do. And so they got to make it count.
Tell me about some of your success stories, because I know there are a number.
Yeah, so, you know, we see a lot of companies. So first of all, just to give you an idea of scope, last year we looked at 2,300 companies and accepted 10, so super selective. Some of the companies you may know of, probably the most well-known of out of Chicago's program is Spot Hero.
Uh-huh.
Spot Hero is a great local success story helping consumers find parking spaces, make reservations ahead of time, and get them at a reduced cost. They're parking about 1 million cars every 45 days right now, so incredible growth across over a dozen cities in the United States. Give Forward is another one you may have heard of. A lot of them are B2B. Chicago tends to be a B2B city, so they're a little less well-known
sure.
consumer brands. Across the Techstars network, Techstars has locations in 25 cities across the world, as far away as Cape Town and Tel Aviv and many through the U.S. Companies like Sphero, the creators of BB-8, which you saw in the Star Wars film, some technical companies like DigitalOcean and SendGrid, which are both huge, huge companies for developers. So we're creating, with 25 locations, about 250 new companies a year coming out of Techstars.
And I wonder, Troy, when you look at them, if it doesn't matter if it's Spot Hero or if it's someone making medical equipment or what it is, do they all follow a similar learning curve? I mean, is there sort of a common course of development when it comes to these companies, or not at all?
So there are some things that are very common across the companies. And in Chicago's program, we tend to focus on customer acquisition and growth. So all of the 10 companies we accepted this year really knew that they were coming in to focus on how to grow that business, because the most important thing is acquiring and retaining customers. But they each have individual problems and individual opportunities. And so that's why we use a mentorship-based program where we find the mentors who have been through what they've been through before, scaled these companies, many times taken them public, and help them with the specifics that are related to the business that they are in today.
If there's a company who's interested in maybe getting involved or being picked up by an accelerator, what is it that you would suggest that they do? I mean, I guess if you have one theme or another they don't fit, that would preclude them. But in general, how is it that they would make themselves attractive to an accelerator?
Yeah, so there are many accelerators throughout the country and the world. First thing I'd suggest that you do is research the particular accelerators you're thinking about applying to, and make sure you talk to alumni, people who have been through it, because there are very, very big differences in the quality of accelerators. But talk to the alums. And then in terms of being at the right stage, for us, it's about having proven product market fit. You have something that consumers or customers actually want. And then being at that stage, not just an idea. About half our companies are pre-revenue, so they don't actually have revenue yet, but they have a product out in the market that people are starting to use, and there's some evidence that they're really engaged with it. And about half of them have a small amount of revenue. The best candidates for an accelerator are people who have the right balance between being tenacious,
mm-hmm.
which is, by the way, a euphemism for being stubborn, but good entrepreneurs have to be really tenacious, and being coachable. We don't want someone who's too coachable, because with all this input from 163 mentors, they'll end up just spinning around in circles. But we also don't want someone who's too stubborn, who won't listen to any of them. So there's this middle ground where you have people who are open-minded, willing to take in that mentorship, take in those ideas, distill it, come up with their own plan of action that he or she as the CEO can execute on, and push the company forward.
Troy Hennikoff, the managing director of Techstars Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
You bet. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.